Welcome,
Okay, Dr. Mender, good to go.
great. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the August 26th, 2021 meeting of the Arizona Board of Primary Education. Please note that we're starting at 10 a.m. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notices hereby given to the general public and members of the board that this meeting will be open to the public on the date and time indicated at the announcement. Meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at www.ppse.az.gov. We're in the lobby of the board's office building in the binder adjacent to the case display meeting notifications. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled during specific time blocks. The board chairperson, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. The board, upon a majority of quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice. ARS 38-431.03A3. Executive session will occur immediately after a vote. Executive sessions are not open to the public. Americans with Disability Act. People with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation such as sign language interpreter or copy of this document in an alternative format by contacting Kevin LaMountain, the executive director, at 602-542-5716 or the TDD number at 800-367-8939. Can we please call the roll?
I will. Dr. Mittman?
Aye. We're present.
Mr. Romano?
Present.
Mr. Lupke?
Present.
Dr. Leck? I see you.
Ah, is my microphone not working? Oh.
No, yours is, Mr. Lupke, yours is Dr. Leck.
I had two on to protect from muting. Sorry, I'm present. Double okay. Muted.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Dr. Leck. Mr. Wallace.
Here.
Mr. Wallace is here. Mr. Ball.
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. And Ms. Cardullo.
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. We have a full board meeting today, all seven members.
Great. Do you want to introduce staff, please?
Certainly. Staff, so Kevin LaMountain is present. Mr. Blanchard?
Present.
Mr. Blanchard is present. Ms. Stanfill?
Present.
Ms. Stanfill is present. Ms. Rome?
Present.
Ms. Rome is present. And Mr. Monahan?
Present.
Great. So we have full staff and a full board.
Great. So this is the, we have a new board member, Susan Cardullo. And I wonder, Susan, do you want to say, introduce yourself to the other members of the board and also the schools who are in attendance today?
Yes, I would be happy to. So hello, everyone. My name is Susan Cardullo. I'm a corporate director of community and people for a private post-secondary institution in Arizona called WCUI School of Medical Imaging and Smith Jason School of Nursing, family-owned and operated. And I have been in this industry for 20 years. I am excited to be here. I know some of you. I have a lot more to know and a lot to learn, but I'm ready to serve.
Great. Well, welcome. Next up is declaration of conflicts of interest, and I think other than the fact that I had an ultrasound several years ago at the school where Ms. Cardullo works, I don't have any conflicts of interest. And if we can, Mr. LaMountain, take the role and just, or do you need people to specify whether they have one, or do we just want to ask if any of the board members have conflicts of interest with any of the institutions that are on the agenda today?
Yes, if by, we don't necessarily need to take the roll, just go ahead. Seamus, I know you've popped on. Do you want to weigh in on that? Just to declare, correct?
Yeah, we've already taken the roll, so if you just want to ask if there's any conflicts to declare, and if there are none, then you can move on.
Okay. Do any of the board members have conflicts of interest to declare?
No.
Hearing none. Okay. And we'll take a silence as a pass. Is that good, Mr. Onahan? Good. Okay. Good. Next up, can we get a motion to accept the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting for May 27, 2021?
I make a motion that we this is Scott Wallace. I make a motion that we accept the board minutes for May 27, 2021.
Great. I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Leck. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Oh, we're gonna.
Aye.
It'll be by roll call.
Okay. Fill them out. Go for it.
Okay. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Lupke?
Aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Ball?
Aye.
And Ms. Cardullo was
abstain.
Not a member, so abstention. So by your vote of 6 ayes and 1 abstention, that motion passes.
And I will move to accept the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting from July 22nd, 2021. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
Go all the seconds.
Okay, we'll take that from Mr. Wallace. Mr. LaMountain, call the roll.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman's an aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano's an aye. Mr. Lupke?
Aye.
Mr. Lupke and aye. Dr. Leck?
Abstain.
Dr. Leck abstains. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace and aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball and aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Abstain.
By your vote of 5 ayes and 2 abstentions, that motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda is review and discussion on the executive director's report. Ms. O'Malley.
Great. Thank you all very much. Thank you. It's been a while since we've all been together. So I would also like to introduce Jacqueline Rome, who's new to our office. Not necessarily new. She's been with us for a few months now. She is working on and with the transcripts and also with the new school applications. So welcome, Jacqueline. We're glad you're here.
Hello, all. Thank you.
So on the executive director's report, the first thing that we'll go over is prior year's budget and the result. Do this briefly. I know that you've all had the opportunity to review the report that I provided in your board packet. If we take a look at the PV 2056 operation report, you will notice that we are on an appropriation of $425,300. Our total expenditures were $372,404.97. So we were under our appropriation, and that sounds wonderful. And I'm glad that we did the right things in terms of trying to get some expenses cut down. We certainly saved on rent last year thanks to the post-secondary commission moving into some of our space at the 1740 building. That certainly helped. One of the things that you will note, and you will note when we go into the FY23 budget, is that we are still under, our expenses are still over revenues. They will continue through this year, through FY22, and as you will see in the proposed budget for FY23, that remains the same. When we get into the budget, we can talk a little more about that, the FY23 budget, but that still remains a concern. If we go to the fund 3027, which is the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, you will see that revenues are over what we expected, and that has everything to do with the change in legislation last year that went into effect, that all of the institutions in the state of Arizona will pay into that particular fund. And in that case, we are $113,169 above what we where we thought we would be in terms of revenues. So our ending fund balance is a little over $201,000. If we move down, we look at the strife where we are currently, the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, where we are currently with a current billing cycle. So that billing cycle went out on July 1st-ish, give or take a couple of days of this year, of the new fiscal year. We billed 169 locations, total anticipated revenue of $368,229.47. We've collected, as of today, this morning, $154,540, and we still have a little over $213,000 left to collect between now and October 1st. I will tell you that the institutions have been very good at giving us information on the Student Tuition Recovery Fund and making those payments. So that particular account, with all the work we did last year, shored up the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. And you will see that in the budget as we roll through that. You know, potentially we're going to get to a point in the next couple of years where we don't need to reach back out and invoice institutions. The next is the just kind of an update on school closures. American Intercontinental University System closed their administration center, but they have they're part of the institution is now an Arizona-based institution, so all of those administrative capacity, all of that those components are now into their regular license, so they did not need to keep that particular center open. I think we've mentioned before, Brighton College has now left Arizona, is now doing other programs that are operated through Utah. The big thing that we did have over the last couple of weeks, month, is the Center for Excellence in Higher Education and College America closure. That happened a few weeks ago. The impact to Student Tuition Recovery Fund at this point in time, we have not had anyone apply for a strife claim at this time. Excuse me. And we have received all of the important documents, the transcripts, the ledger cards. So while we still have a year of potential strife claims, there's a handful of students that may be able to apply for that. I think we're going to come out of this fine. I will give credit to a couple of folks at the Center for Excellence in Higher Education in helping us gain access to all of the student transcripts. We have them all, I hope. We don't know what we don't know until students start requesting transcripts, but it looks as though we have everything that we need for that. And then the University of Phoenix campus down in Southern Arizona closed during the last couple of months, which was a planned, we knew all of that going into it. The dashboard, you can get a feel for where we are. We're 216 schools currently. That will add to today, depending upon the outcome of today's meeting. And we're currently working on the October cycle for renewals with the 48 schools in that particular cycle. You will see a couple of those coming up in the October meeting. And then the institutions that are on ed monitoring. Is there any questions about the executive director report that I can answer?
Kevin, it's Susan Cardullo. I get to play the new card and say, where is this dashboard? I see lots and lots of documents, and so I'm wondering if it's there or if you were just speaking generally.
It's just on the executive director report.
Not a separate document. And
it's not a separate document, correct. And if there's any additional information that you, Ms. Cardullo, or any of the board members need or want, please let me know, and I will add additional information into future executive director reports.
Thank you.
Thank you. So next is the FY23 budget approval. So all of you have had an opportunity. I hope we have to have the I have to have the board vote today in order to send our budget and meet the deadline September 1st for FY23 budget. So all of the documents are in your folder. Here is just a really brief high-level overview of the difference between the 21 actuals, 22 budgeted, excuse me, that we're currently in now, and the FY23 proposed budget. The changes that we have, so this is the operating license, so this is the board budget. This isn't the student tuition recovery fund. This is the board budget, which is an appropriated budget. Our budget request this year is $413,500, and as you can see, as we mentioned earlier, our expenses are continually outpacing our revenues. We've known that for quite some time. This flow through is going to have pretty dramatic impact when we get to FY25, meaning that we will, right now we're running the difference between the revenue and the expenses is being made up by about $150,000 worth of carryover money through the previous years. But we're now at a point where when we get to FY25, we're in a different situation than we are today. So any questions on this particular part of the budget? You'll see that we've got a few things that are in here that show an increase. We have had an increase in the Attorney General fee that we pay. We've had an increase in the licensing contract for Salesforce. We've had an increase for CSB, which is our group that handles all of our finances. Our risk management went up, and we just were notified a couple of weeks ago that our statewide contract with Adobe, which was very inexpensive, has now changed. And now that's an additional expense that we didn't have budgeted for FY22, but I did put into FY23. On the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, you will see that we did shore this up. We have made the improvements. And you'll see that the revenues are forecasted revenue. This is a non-appropriated account. So the legislature does not need to determine how we spend this particular money. You'll see that our revenue is 326.30. Excuse me, moving forward, 326.50 into FY23. Expenses, as we all know, those expenses can change depending upon a school closure, but that's what we have budgeted in there. And then the line item expenses, we did show one small increase in professional services for AG. So in your board packet, you also have all of the 35-page document that needs to go over to the OSPB, our analysts, and then to the governor's office. So I'm open to any questions that anybody has.
Great. Well, thanks. And I think we'll need – why don't we get a motion to approve the budget, and then we'll discuss it after we get a motion in a second. And, Kevin, do you want a motion for the operating budget separate from the motion for the strife budget?
Yes. So if we'll do the operating budget, the 2056 budget, and then the 3027 budget.
Okay. So can we get a motion to approve the fiscal year 2023 2056 budget, which is the operating budget?
Stick Lube Geese, so moved.
A second, please.
Susan Cardullo, I can second.
Great, thank you. Okay, discussion. I had a question, Mr. LeMond. On the operating budget, we've seen an increase in the number of schools year over year this past year, and it looks like, if this agenda is any indication. It looks like there are more schools that will be applying for licensure in the state. Do you see that as a trend and something that can offset some of the operating losses?
It will certainly help as long as we can keep that number of active schools at or above where we are now. The biggest challenge to that moving forward is that when we add schools, like the ones that we're adding right now, they're, when you look at the revenue structure and how much they pay per license, it's a relatively small amount. New applications are $800. Depending upon revenue for the first year, their first renewal cycle license might be $600. The schools that we have lost over the last few years were the bigger schools, the $2,300 per renewal license. And that certainly has caused the challenge. So when you lose five or six big schools, it takes 10 or 12 or 15 smaller schools to make up that difference. Larger schools typically have, I think Grand Canyon, for one example, Grand Canyon, I think over this last year has probably had 40 or 50 different program revisions that carry with that a $500 fee that's associated with that program addition. A small school that has one program probably won't have any. So that's where the discrepancy is.
So what I hear you saying is that they help the budget.
Every one of those help the budget. Yes, they do.
Just saying, and, for the record.
So that's the challenge moving forward, which is why I don't see a great swing in the revenue. I think our expenses and our revenues are going to continue to have these issues until we resolve that. And I think it's critical, too, to understand for everyone that's on the call today that the $800 that it takes to do an application, initial application, has somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000 worth of man hours to get the application to where you see it today. Not the best business model, but it is what it is. And I will tell you that my goal is this upcoming session is to at least start the process of having conversations with the legislature, see if we can move something forward. If not this year, at least as the legislature changes next year. We know that will happen. We will certainly have a different governor. We will have more than likely a different makeup of the legislature. But I think it's important to start the process this year to see if we can do anything in terms of a fee adjustment, which has not happened in 25 years.
Yeah, that's not exactly a new topic. You know, this has come up for the last 4 years since I've been on the board, where we keep kind of projecting we're going to fall short in the future. And I think the staff has done a great job in regards to trying to identify areas to reduce expenses where possible, while at the same time, when you haven't adjusted fees in the last 20 to 30 years, eventually you're not keeping pace out there with other costs that are hitting the department. I think, you know, not that we need to resolve it here today, but there may need to be consideration of some type of working group again to come forward on how to consider engaging on the legislative side to in regards to how we can actually action and move forward with some type of appropriate increase that continues to set the board up to be financially solvent. I'll leave it at that.
I have a question about that, because earlier when you were talking about the things going up for you, the Adobe went up, the AG's office gets to charge you more. How can they do it and you can't? They're not the same statutorily prescribed fees stuff?
Correct.
How's that work?
So all of our fees are in rule and statute. So in order to change, as we saw last year with the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, in order to make any of those changes, it has to go through the state legislature.
But, like, the AG's office isn't the same?
No, we have an agreement. We could choose not to use the AG. And I love you, Shannis, and we're going to continue to do that. It's the choice of each board to, whether or not they want to use it. Obviously, we do. And this year, that cost went up. Actually, it went up substantially over what it was last year. But it's either that or not have the AG there to support us, and that would not be wise for our board.
So, Kevin, you're saying in the statute it literally says $800, like it says an amount? Okay. Yeah, so yes, what we would want is not a change of that amount. We would want a change of the language so that it can scale or have the ability to increase with inflation or something.
Correct.
You know, I think if we did it like what Mike was talking about earlier with the working group, you know, I think we found a way of, you know, making it even across, right? Because you've got the big institutions paying a lot, you know, paying a lot because they're offering a lot of programs, and you might have a small school that only has one. And so thinking maybe the same way we did with the Strife Fund, where it's, you know, based on the number of programs you have approved or something, might be a way to get buy-in from everyone too.
Great. I will certainly, Dr. Leck, I'll certainly put that together, get a working group together sometime in, you know, obviously we're working on timelines that if we were going to try to do anything for this legislative session, you really have to have support, someone that's willing to carry a bill in the month of September, because all of the legislation for the most part is drafted in October and then moves forward until next year. So I think it'd be great to have the at least the working group put together. I do have a meeting scheduled with the Senate, and we'll see what we can get from that group, and then I'll put something together. But thank you.
Yeah, and I like not rushing it to, you know, with the Strife, it was really stressful and, you know, had a lot of emotion. Right. So the longer you have time to work over it, the least crazy it feels.
Thank you.
I mean, we have a window of 24 to 36 months right now to work it. And the good news is, at least for right now, based on the budget that's been put forward, the FY22 certainly seems reasonable from that standpoint. So it didn't mean to necessarily derail us with going off on 2025, but from a 2022, I don't have any further questions.
Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, Mr. LaMountain, can you please call the vote?
Great. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Oh, no. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano's an aye. Mr. Lupke? Mr. Lupke?
Aye.
Mr. Lupke's an aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck is an aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace is an aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball is an aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo is an aye. By your vote of 7 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Okay. And can we have a motion to approve the 3027 student recovery, tuition recovery fund, please?
This is Mike Romano.
I motion to approve the student. Go ahead, Mike.
You pick whichever, Dr. Leck.
You win.
Yourself.
You why win. You...
Why don't you second?
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion, second from Dr. Leck. Any discussion or questions regarding this item?
I think this one's a little fresher for all of us, so I think we're probably good.
Right, and I think for Ms. Cardullo, maybe for Mr. Ball also, the Strife Fund was shored up in 2022 because of the Department of Ed's consolidation of all accrediting bodies as kind of like a level playing field. And so schools that were regionally accredited before which is a term that's no longer recognized by the Department of Ed, were exempted in statute from the STRI fund, and now they're included in the STRI fund. So that's why a little bit better, whereas they were pretty weak with some major school closures over the last few years. Any other discussion or questions? All right. Mr. Mountain, please call the vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman's an aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano's an aye. Mr. Lupke.
Aye.
Mr. Lupke's an aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck is an aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace is an aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball is an aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo is an aye. By your vote, 7 ayes, no nays. That motion passes. Thank you very much. I will get that over to the governor's office tomorrow.
Great. And thank you, Kevin, and the entire staff for, you know, like you said, you guys do a tremendous amount of work under ordinary circumstances, and even more so when things get a little bit rough. Anything else from the executive director's report? Next item on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action on Sonoran Desert Institute regarding the loss of eligibility with SARA, the State Authorization Reciprocity Association. That's probably not right. There. Representing the institution, Ms. Lee, Mr. Carroll, Lisa Spiker, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, please. This is Tracy Lee, president of SDI. First, thank you for the opportunity to provide information regarding SDI's efforts to secure necessary state authorizations should our appeal with AZ-Thera be denied. Just to give some background, I know there's some of you that are new. So SDI transitioned an employee-owned company, or ESOP, in fall of 2018. The decision to become an ESOP was made recognizing that the resulting debt and repayment over time would result in a low composite score due to the negative equity impact on two of the three factors in that formula. The recognized risk to the institution was how U.S. Department of Ed and NCSARA would respond to that low composite score for an institution that has consistently and continues to demonstrate solid financial performance, growth, and profitability. As expected, Department of Ed required us to post a letter of credit. We opted to post a 50% letter of credit in 2020, since their regulations provide this as an alternative to demonstrate financial responsibility when a school does not achieve the composite score threshold. We forwarded that letter to you, State Board, and to DAC as our accreditor on September 14th of last year. And recognizing that NCSARA has intentionally utilized indicators and policies used by the regulatory triad of Department of Ed, state, and accreditors, we were cautiously optimistic that NCSARA would align its consideration of our eligibility with that of Department of Ed using that alternative. However, to mitigate risk, we committed to the preparation and planning for the potential need to obtain state authorization in several states should eligibility be withdrawn. In 2020 then, when SDI was up for AZ-SARA renewal, we were informed that since Department of Ed's published composite score still reflected an older year when our score was 3.0, we were eligible to apply for renewal. The published scores have historically lagged, And in January of 2021, we were renewed for yet another year by AZ and NCSARA. However, Department of Ed accelerated their published score updates, and where in prior cycles those updates occurred in the fall timeframe, they updated the published score this past spring. At that point, we were in communication with AZSARA, who informed us they needed to talk to NCSARA to validate the timelines and procedures for our circumstance. We had a follow-up call on August 9th, where we were officially notified of our ineligibility due to the composite score, and we discussed the appeal process, which is new to SARA. And in fact, our understanding is we're the first school to go through an appeal with SARA. We get to be the guinea pigs. Upon receipt of the written notification, we initiated the appeal process with the intent to appeal notice back to Arizona SARA, AZSARA on August 20th, which we also provided to Arizona State Board and to DAC. Our understanding is that AZSARA has 10 days to respond with the guidance on the procedures to move forward with the appeal. We haven't heard back yet. We're in that 10-day time frame. Given the time frames, it's not clear yet if this will be considered at the AZSARA September 9th or January 13th meeting for consideration. It's also our understanding that during the appeal process, our status as a SARA participant continues. We had expected to deal with this anyway during our January renewal process, rather than this mid-year withdrawal and appeal, but we've been building the foundation of what we need to do. This really just accelerates our efforts. Knowing that our SARA participation would be at risk during the periods of low composite score, the steps we've taken over the past 3 years include a few things. We engaged the services of both Cooley and Siena, who both have significant experience in state authorization matters, and they provided insight and guidance on the states that we prioritized in our pursuit of that individual state authorization. The prioritization is really based on our student population in each state and the requirements for each state, as well as the anticipated duration of that approval process. Some are real short, some are long. We also hired a full-time employee whose primary role is to obtain those required authorizations. As you well know, the rules in each state are subject to change over time, so we've had to continuously update our analysis and prioritization to align with those changes. Fortunately, as stands today, nearly 67% of our student population reside in states where we're either already approved or where authorization is not required for an accredited, fully distanced education provider without physical presence. We've always avoided hiring in states that could trigger physical presence, which frustrates our hiring managers, but we've tried to plan ahead for this. And there's an additional 12.5% of our students that are in states with very low volume of our total population and or have a minimal effort required to secure that authorization. There's 4 states where we've ceased enrollments, some back in 2018 when we did the ESOP in anticipation of this possibility. So now we're really focused on the 10 states that we've deemed to have the most potential impact because of our student population in that state and or the amount of time and effort required. Our understanding is that our currently enrolled students can continue through February of 2022, even if our SARA eligibility is withdrawn after consideration of our appeal. So the question rises about what happens to your revenue if you can't enroll in those states even for a temporary amount of time. Although it varies by month, in any given month, we have monthly starts. So the revenue from our continuing students typically represents more than 93% of our total revenue for that month. We've looked at our top 10 enrollment states and identified 3, Georgia, Virginia, and North Carolina, that have been our highest priority. The remaining seven of the top 10 require no action based on exemption, either by law or rule in that state. We've communicated with those top three priority states, and we've determined that there's no impact to future enrollment. Based on our analysis, even if we needed to pause enrollment on all of the states with potential impact, we looked at the 20% of the population that come from those states and that 7% of new student revenue, and that's really only 1.5% of total projected revenue. We totally understand your concern about that revenue if we do have to pause. So we also wanted to mention that at the end of Q2, June 30th, we are ahead of our budgeted revenue by 15.5%. We are also projecting that through the end of this month, or at the end of this month, we'll have already achieved our budgeted EBITDA for the entire 2021 year. So the remainder of the year would be overperformance. Because of this, should we need to pause enrollments temporarily while we work through certain state apps, we're really confident that the impact to revenue and EBITDA would not materially impact our students or our institute. We know that pausing enrollment could affect our students while we await those approvals, and appreciate your concerns, or that you share our concern for protecting our students. We really take pride in our concern for students and our relationships with our regulators. To the best of my knowledge, we've not had any complaints to AZ-SARA or the State Board under our current leadership, and we really want to uphold that record. Based on our discussions with AZ-SARA, we expect our status will remain unchanged through that date, and we're discussing how to best mitigate any disruption to any student's academic pursuit while we obtain those necessary approvals to provide distance education in the states that will take us the longest to secure. So we're positioned to continue operating under our current recognition and approvals by our regulatory triad, even if we temporarily lose SARA eligibility. We originally projected that we would need those state approvals for at least 7 years, but with our financial success to date, which has allowed us to continue to pay down our inside loan more aggressively associated with the ESOP, we're now projecting attainment of the required composite score in 2023 or 2024 at the latest. So given our strong financial performance, we're admittedly frustrated that we're dealing with these individual state authorization matters because of what we consider a technicality in the rules that don't provide the provision for that 50% LOC as an alternative. Regardless, we're committed to doing everything necessary to remain in good standing with all regulatory agencies. So we appreciate you allowing us the opportunity to join today's meeting at the 11th hour to address any outstanding concerns.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the background. And I'll open it up to questions and discussion, but why don't I call on Mr. Lu, who in 2018 predicted all of this. And so why don't I ask if you'd like to lead us off.
Well, didn't set out to be a prophet. You're carrying $34 million of internal loans or indebtedness. And I'm not quite sure what you'll tell SARA in your appeal. Nevertheless, the Department of Ed, you know, I don't possibly see you coming into compliance on the composite score by 2023. I think that's I'm not sure who's giving you that advice. But with a composite score that is less than 0.2, it's going to be a miracle. What exactly is going to be the substance of your appeal to Sarah? On what basis would you hope for them to make the exception to the composite score standard?
I could speak to that a little bit if you'd like, Tracy. So Chris Carraway, Vice President of Operations at SDI. It does go back to and appreciate the question, and I'll defer some of those the statements on when our composite score will bounce back and the payoff of that to Mark Pacello is also on, just for transparency, who's our Vice President of Finance, and may be able to answer some of those questions a little better than I would be. Some of the basis of the response to Sarah in the appeal is the fact that, you know, when that composite score dipped from the perfect 3.0 to the 0.2 because of that you pointed out, the process allowed us to provide that 50% letter of credit, and the letter back from the department was that we are financially responsible with that. Because the Department of Education deems us as financially responsible, and we've remained in good standing to this point with our creditor and the state, to kind of complete that triad that Tracy spoke to, that because the department recognizes us financially responsible beyond the composite score, that Sarah would consider that as well, recognizing that they too want to support that triad and not go beyond, you know, what those represent.
Okay. So I think both the Department of Ed and this board are obviously concerned about if there should be a default on your ability to manage that internal loan.
Mark, I don't know if you want to speak to that, but to date, we are well ahead on the pay down of that loan. And
what does well ahead mean?
Well, Dr. Lubke, the last time we spoke, this is Mark Pacello. Last time we spoke to the Finance Committee, you're correct, we were at about $34 million in debt. We've had some circumstances change. We've had some debt forgiveness on that loan. We are currently, as of the June financials, our debt to pay off that loan is $20 million. And then when you consider our earnings record to go against the outstanding shares, we should earn out of that negative equity within the next 3 years tops. We had some advanced pay downs based on some bank covenants, and we also had some debt forgiveness that represented a significant chunk of that debt pay down, that accelerated debt pay down.
Yeah, I think the upside is that you're making money, and that the money that you make is going towards the debt repayment. Obviously, any sort of suspension of financial aid or enrollments, if your enrollments get suspended, that revenue stream, it's kind of like you've just stopped feeding the golden goose, and the poor thing can't give out those eggs to pay down that loan. So, that's a serious concern. For this board, I think we would want to consider increasing the amount of your bond as a hedge against default. So, and I'll leave it up to Sarah as to whether or not they feel that this is a justifiable exception. Obviously, the feds are going to restrict your cash if they haven't already, right? Are you on?
No, not with
the 50% LLC. The 50% letter of credit, yeah, removes us from any heightened cash monitoring.
Okay.
And we delay in drawing down anyway. That's another one of our internal practices we always have. And our plan has always been to continue that. We do not draw on it.
You don't draw down early?
No.
That is correct.
We never have. We had operated so much with cash and military funding prior to getting Title IV funding in 2016. And so many of those lag anyway. We implemented extremely conservative protocols to where we've always waited until students are in class, positive attendance in their second week of a term before we draw down from G5.
That's good.
And Dr. Lupke, I'd like to address, if I could, understanding the, you know, your concern on those states, you know, and that's why some of this, I realize some of the materials we sent, obviously, were last minute. We submitted them to Mr. LaMountain yesterday evening, you know, so just, you know, having heard that we'd be on this board meeting last minute, there is a state map involved. And because we are, as Tracy said in her opening, because we are fully online and don't represent a physical presence in many states, nearly half the states out of the gate we're exempt from and we'll be able to continue enrolling.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's that keeps you in the game.
Would anyone other than Dr. Lupke like to ask any questions? I'm saying that he...
Chris, Mr. Caraway, there's only one Dr. Lupke in the Lupke household, and she is not home today, so
Sorry.
Well, Mr. is fine.
And send her an honorary, I suppose.
Yeah. But back to you, Dr. Medman.
Do note it.
Okay. So I think that, you know, you know, feel free, other members of the board, to jump in and deferred, or we start off with Mr. Lupke, because, you know, at the change of ownership back in 2018, I think he was the lead on that agenda item, and so he was very familiar. Plus, he is also familiar with ESOS, I think, having successfully navigated that process himself. And so, you know, first of all, are there other questions? And then I'd like to I'll circle yes. back in a moment. Go ahead.
Dr. Mittman, Susan Cardullo, if I may.
Yeah, you may.
Thank you, Ms. Lee, for being here and for all of your explanation. I just wanted to make sure I heard you right, that you said you've figured out that for sure all of your current students at all the states who are currently enrolled can make it through 2022. Did you figure that out on a state-by-state basis?
That's actually a provision of the grace period following loss of eligibility.
Okay, because I see that, you know, SARA membership is not a requirement, and as Mr. Caraway mentioned, many of the states you're already going to be fine, and so I actually am not so concerned about losing SARA as long as you've got that grace period that's long enough to cover the current students. It's more of a concern about the finances, as Mr. Lupke mentioned. So, but I just wanted to confirm that about the SARA grace period. Thank you.
Correct. It's even in our letter from AD Sarah with that date.
And how long is the program that most of them are in?
We have certificate programs that are 8 months in length, an associate degree that is four semesters. Our average student completes that in a year.
Okay, thank you.
To reiterate that was going to be what I was talking about too, is really the idea that they have approval or don't have approval through SARA is very separate than I think what we're looking at, right? Which is, are you, we don't want to have a tap into the strike fund that we've just finally shored up here. So I think that's really what I'm focusing on and taking direction from the board members who have a lot of finance experience. It's not really whether you're Sarah or not Sarah, and you know, because there are ways to do that the old school way. So.
Doug Ball here asking a question.
Go ahead.
When does the Department of Ed letter of credit expire?
Great question. Our current letter, I don't have that date in front of me. It's in December of this year, and we have committed And we expect that when we receive notification from our most recently submitted audit, that they will provide the amount that they want to secure renewal for the subsequent year. So we have intentionally...
The audit show a composite score of less than one?
Yeah, we will, for 2020, our composite score will remain at the 0.2 based on those two factors of negative equity that we can't move the needle on until the debt. And
how much was that letter of credit?
Mark, do you have that number in front of you?
It's just under $3 million in total. And it's based on our Title IV drawdowns for the previous year.
Right. How much is your bond currently? Do we have that?
The bond, Dr. Mittman and Mr. Ball, you mean the bond for our board?
Yeah.
Is that the question? Yeah, it's $20,000.
Okay.
So would one of our options be to look at how, well, first of all, refer it to the Finance Committee for monitoring, and to increase the bond to the 10% or whatever our calculation is that we've done with other institutions that show low composite scores?
We can do that. And I guess the question for the board, and maybe some guidance, Mr. Lamartin, from you, would be, you know, there will be an appeal that will perhaps be taken up on September 9th with AZ Sarah. And the Sonoran Desert Institute is scheduled or would have ordinarily been scheduled or could be scheduled for the October 28th AZ private post-secondary meeting. And so would it be preferential to go ahead and bond now and do what we usually do around quarterly report at this point, or the alternative would be to have the Institute come back to this board and maybe provide a more detailed pro forma around projected enrollment and cash flow based on the number of states that are, you know, already within, you know, where they're already licensed, or states that don't need licensure, plus I think three or four states that are pursuing state licensure, and then we can determination at that point. And I see Mr. Our assistant AG, who wants to weigh in on this also.
Thank you. Dr. Mittman, board members, I'd just like to briefly say that, you know, as you noted, we do have a renewal coming up in October. Pursuant to our statutes, it'd be most appropriate at that renewal to ask them to stipulate if you believe that a higher bond is needed. And me and Mr. LaMountain have talked about that already prior to the meeting. So if that's a route that you want to go down, that's certainly something that you can do. It may be more appropriate to wait to increase that until October if, you know, you're not concerned, because they are still able to operate. But just wanted to put that out there.
Any board members want to weigh in on that option of deferring this till the October 28th meeting?
That's right. Mr.
Romano has hand up.
Yeah, sorry. Just before maybe we jump to that, I just want to make sure I'm hearing things correctly. So I don't want to put words into SDI's mouth by any means. One, it sounds like right now you're working through the mitigation of if you do have to suspend enrollments and all of that. But if ultimately it does come back at this time that you do lose, Sarah, I don't know if I necessarily heard the company's position on that, or the school's position on that. So if you could just clarify that piece.
Sure. I'll try to take a stab at that. I believe you're talking about where we're at with each individual state, maybe, on how we'll, if we lose the Sarah participation. We're actively already pursuing those states that we aren't exempt from, and the timeline in each of those states varies. You know, I suspect when we come back before you in October, whenever it is, we'll have additional states, you know, in tow, and you know, can explain further where we're at with other states. So the list that I provided to Mr. LaMountain and the board, we can update ongoing to keep you, you know, informed on where we're at with those individual states. In the event that we have to pause in any state, it will be temporary, and that period of time that'll be temporary really depends on each state, anywhere from maybe a few weeks if we're in that process and getting close, to maybe a few months in a state that has a longer, you know, runway on those.
Thank you for that. And then to Ms. Lukey's original question, which was around kind of the position you'll take during the appeal, I'm taking away from that what you intend on bringing forward is, listen, we've been in a great position as a school over the last several years, financially solvent, really, with this model. We're not expecting anything to change from that standpoint. And so really, as opposed to an appeal, what we're asking for is an exception for consideration until we can get the composite score back to an acceptable level. Is that how I'm understanding the maybe position for appeal to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's close. I think the one caveat, and to be fair, we haven't finalized our, you know, our the verbiage on our appeal completely. So that may, you know, we may still adjust that. But I think we're really leaning into the fact that the department recognizes us as financially responsible per the letter that they sent back based on that 50% letter of credit that we were able to post, therefore meeting the criteria. In the instance that that Sarah, you know, dates as they have, that their bylaws really lock them into, you know, looking at that composite score solely, then yes, it may be an exception that we're seeking. And Mark, I don't know if you'd like to speak any further to that.
Well, no, I just really wanted to point out that our letter from Ed, from Department of Ed, when they received our letter of credit, it says we are deemed financially responsible, which means they've given us an exception to the financial responsibility score, if that makes sense.
So if I could, I think the, you know, the strategy around Sarah, or the, you know, the process that Sarah will follow is a little bit outside of the scope of our discussion today, if that's okay. So could I get your people's feedback on deferring this to the upcoming October 28th board meeting, or would we like to move forward with increasing the bond and other, you know, other measures like quarterly reports?
Dr. Goodman, when is the next financial meeting at the same time as the board?
I hope not. I think it's September.
It is.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, the third week in September.
So maybe we recommend this goes to the financial committee for consideration, and then to give a recommendation to the full board in October regarding the financial Arizona. Your dog really wants an opinion. That's a lot to say, Dr. Mittman.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would be fine with me. And I think if the Desert Institute, Sonoran Desert Institute, could prepare, and you can work with staff on this for what we would need at the board meeting, you know, that would help inform the process. And you may already have, at that point, by late September, you'll also have some kind of response from AZ there as well. Is the rest of the board good with that? Mr. Lupke, since it's easy for Dr. Lett to say that because she's not on the finance.
Sorry.
For Mr. Wallace.
Yes. Dr. Mittman, if we can kick the can down to the finance committee, but I think I'm not sure what it is we would be able to determine at that point. If Sarah does not change its standards to make this exception, then whatever consequence of not having their approval, does it have some sort of adverse financial effect on SDI? I mean, I'm a little fuzzy. We've had a couple people comment that Sarah doesn't matter as it relates to federal funding. Is that accurate? It was my understanding that you needed Sarah to be able to do business across state lines.
Or you need to be licensed.
Yeah.
You know, the way SDI is licensed with this board or with this state office, you need it in New Mexico and Colorado, so that's really right. the question. And so, you know, I'm gonna suggest that I think really it doesn't need to come before the Finance and Audit Committee, because I think if you guys at SDI can prepare the materials that we would need for the October meeting, you know, I know that, you know, members of the Finance Committee are going to go through them in detail, and I think we would be prepared at the October 28th meeting to address it at that point. That work for you, Dr. Leck?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find a solution to.
Yeah, it also gives them a little bit more time to put together whatever pro forma based on sort of like it's almost like a spreadsheet of all the different states where where students enroll from, and it sounds like there's a handful that are sort of outliers now, that either they don't have licensure or that don't require licensure. So there's a handful that do require licensure, and they're also big feeders. You guys can put together, just a model to show how you're going to operate, should you not get a positive response from AZ Sarah. That would be what we would want from for the October meeting. And I would say,
Dr. Newman, I just want to reiterate too, the state by state is how many institutions, including the one I work for, that's very, very large. We have the whole 50 state approval process, Sarah. So, I mean, what Sarah does is streamline it. It doesn't impede it. It actually just streamlines it so that institutions and states don't have to jump through so many hoops. But you can do it the old way. The issue that they're going to have is going to have to be on timelines as far as, 6 months is 6 months, but some states only have two or three people in their office. You look at our board, our staff. There's only so many of them, and there's a lot going on, so that's the bigger concern, but what is not dependent on the other, and that's why I was trying to reemphasize that the Sarah thing is separate. What I really think we have to care about is the finances going forward, and whether or not students are going to be negatively impacted, from that potential, but they surely can do it the old way.
The map exhibit you provided for us, I know it was late, but that's a great example. If you continue to refine that I think will be very helpful for us.
Sure.
Thanks. That we've been using that as kind of our ongoing tracking. It just changes often.
Okay, great. So do we need a motion or we're good?
No, you can just continue the matter to the October meeting.
Sounds great. All right. Well, thanks.
And Dr. Mittman, if I may, just for one moment, if I can just to the, I want to thank the institution for having the conversation with us yesterday. I appreciate that. A lot of the materials that you received did come in last night. Now that we've had an opportunity to review it, I appreciate that. But I think it's really critical that the institution understands that our notification, anything that comes from your accreditor, from the department, from Sarah, from anyone, you need to notify us immediately. upon receipt of any of that communication. We talked about that yesterday, but it is critical that you provide that information directly to us as soon as you receive it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Next up on the agenda, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license application. So we have a renewal application for the Tucson School of Homeschooling, for which I am the lead on the board. And so we have representing the school, we have the owner, Mr. Kruger, Mr. Baker, and Mr. Despen. And so I'll turn it over to you if you want to make an opening statement.
Yes. Thank you very much and good morning. My name is Stuart Baker. And I don't believe Dustin is here on the call. We haven't seen him yet. But we should be able to answer any questions that you have based on the materials that we've supplied to you. I retired as an administrator in 2018 from K-12 public education. And really, you know, thought I would be able to relax into the sunset until Darius asked me to step in and assist with this process and to act as administrator for Tucson School of Horseshoeing. And it's been a steep learning curve for me over the last 6 weeks, 2 months, not only for the, you know, subject area. I'm not a farrier. And I didn't know a whole lot about horses, so I've learned a lot there going through lessons, but also the private education process and the post-secondary education process, which have unique qualities to them. So I'm on a steep learning curve, and I'm looking forward to more and a good, positive relationship with this organization and the board moving forward. I do want to say thank you to Kevin and all of his staff for the assistance that they've given us so far, and particularly recognize Fred Lockhart for his assistance with us. I think the most recent updates you've seen are really a result of his tireless editing and patience explanations to us on, you know, what we need and how that needs to look. And it's made a huge difference, I believe, in our presentation. And I'm looking forward to learning more. And we are extremely grateful to him. I don't think we would be able to do this without him. I know that there's a lot of information that you've seen. And so I don't want to reiterate information that you already know. What are the next steps in this meeting for you? I'm not hearing you.
So the first thing that we don't know, I don't believe we received any financial statements. And unless I overlooked them, Mr. LaMountain, can you confirm whether we did or we didn't, but I don't see any in the packet.
Let me review really quick and see what we have in there for them. We did receive some. All right. One of the issues that we've had going for the last almost year now is I don't necessarily know what we do and what we don't have, what's current, what's not current. Initially, the institution was going to go through the change of ownership at the same time, because the change of ownership actually happened back in 2019. So the information that we received for the financials are in part personal financials that came from Mr. Kruger, but I know that we have them, so I will I apologize for them not being in your folder, but we do have some.
Well, we can upload them also. I apologize for jumping in, but we do have the finances from the previous owner and financial statements from Dustin Despon, and those listed out, and they were part of the upload in July, but as I explained to Mr. Montaigne, it seemed like that upload timed out. We uploaded the everything again, and it looked like it uploaded correctly, but I guess that there were some problems with that upload. But I can provide those statements to you. We can upload them immediately, and I've got them actually in my notebook right here.
Yeah, they...
So, and how long have you been with the school, Mr.
Started with them 6 weeks ago, I believe, January 20th.
Because I know, you know, we saw a rather lengthy communication thread with the staff. You know, a lot of no responses, a lot of missed deadlines, a penalty fee that had to be paid. And so I'm glad to hear that you've only been there for 6 weeks, because I think all of this took place earlier. Plus the change of ownership of itself, you know, needs to be done in a timely manner.
I absolutely agree on that. There are some reasons behind that. Part of the change of ownership was the agreement that the former owner was to present and provide the paperwork for renewal for 2 years. Darius, who's sitting beside me, did not know that that paperwork had not been completed for this year. Was not informed about that.
I knew it was, that was for 2019.
Yeah, it was for 2019. But the 2020 paperwork, he thought was being done by the prior owner, and it wasn't. And so he's been playing catch up for a while, and then asked me to come in and help with that. Plus, there was a signature, the liability release, page 12 of the change of ownership form, that the prior owner was not signing. And we finally got his signature on that, I believe the 21st of July, and then submitted that along with our fees on that day when we had the complete packet together.
And Mr. LaMountain, it's possible that I may have overlooked the financial statements. I would say if
you...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dr. Mint. They are not in there. The last financial statement that I have that was uploaded as a component of the... This was uploaded on the 9th of August, was a 2017 financial statement. So the reason why what you're seeing in the renewal, so there's two things that are going on here at the same time. There's the renewal that this particular license expired on 12/31 of 2020. So we're 8.5 months, almost 9 months from expiration date that they have been running on this expired license, which we allow them to continue to do. And then there is the part that actually should have preceded this, which was the change of ownership that should have happened in 2019. That we're still collecting data and information on, that is initially wanted to have them as part of this particular meeting. The information, as you can tell, and as you can see by the string of emails and communications that we have with the institution, that we didn't receive those. So I pushed the change of ownership up to October. And the reason why you're seeing this in front of the board today with a relatively confusing renewal is that we're out of every time frame that the statute and rule require. We are over that, and so we are now at a point where I wanted to get this in front of you, in front of the board, to determine what our next step should be, because we're eight and a half months out of compliance with this particular
issue. You know, per statute or rule, we have to make a decision today, right? This is what you're saying.
Their next renewal cycle, I will send out, I push the button on September 1st, which is just next week. they'll be behind now almost two cycles behind. So, I'll lead, and perhaps Mr. Monahan can chime in terms of if there's any other issue that we have with this that the board needs to determine today, or push this, or so maybe Ms. Monahan can provide guidance.
I apologize. I was having computer trouble there. So it's my understanding we don't have a change of ownership completed.
We have an application. We have some documentation. We do have a bill of sale that was provided from the old owner, and these are all recent developments that were within the last few weeks. And I will tell you, Darius and Mr. Stewart, we've been working, or Mr. Baker, we've been working together on this over the last few months, but we're starting to get more information. So we do have the application. It was submitted. And we do have some materials that are yet to be determined. In my initial review, I bounced everything to October because we're not ready for that yet. It would have not gone well in this meeting.
Okay. Well, and we would want that change of ownership prior to renewing that license, correct? Because we're renewing it under a new party, not an old party.
I think that's where Mr. Monahan, we need to, I think that's part of this process is, to be honest with you, I'm really unclear where we are because we are so far away from what would be a normal chain of events for this particular licensing. So this, again, this institution is out of compliance for almost 9 months. Their next renewal starts September 1st, which their next license would expire on the 24th. On December 31st, 2021. However, they don't have a January 1, 2021 license that's approved yet. And that's the confusing part of this is. And typically, this would never get to the board level because these are done. This institution has been licensed for an extremely long period of time. They don't get to board level unless there's issues and challenges mm-hmm. you currently see.
Okay. So my one question then would be, based on our review times for renewals, we have 60 days for administrative review, 45 days for subsidy review, and 105 days. So what I hear is that we're about double past that 105 days.
Correct.
So we are outside of review times. Again, that's up to the board's discretion, but there's several possibilities. They could withdraw the renewal application and they could submit an initial application, or they could resubmit their renewal. The issue is that we're still outside that time period. So again, it's up to the board's discretion, but it would appear since we are outside the substantive review times and we don't have the information that we have requested, at this point, one of the board's options, again, is to have them withdraw the application and file an initial application along with their change of ownership.
I believe that the school does not operate until the fall again anyway, right? Weren't you guys off, I think, July, August?
We currently have students who are interested in starting with us October 4th.
Okay. So, Mr. Mahan or Mr. Lamont, would the school be able to start at that point, or if they're filing a new application, essentially an unlicensed school. Well, either way, they're an unlicensed school at this point.
Another consideration, Dr. Mittman, is if the board believes that based on the information it received, that it can do its due diligence and renew a license, that is up to your discretion as well.
Okay. Well, I'll pass that over to Mr. LaMountain because you guys have been dealing with with this whole process.
Dr. Medvin and members of the board, I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this. So the institution at the beginning of the year, as you can see probably by my narrative, my level of frustration was as pretty high as it's been in many, many, many years. But since that initial first few months, things have been better, especially since the institution has brought on Mr. Baker and has contracted out with Mr. Lockhart. Things have been moving quicker, and the information that we've been receiving is of a higher quality. There were certainly some issues and challenges with the institution when Mr. Kruger initially purchased the institution, because it was right during the shutdown in COVID. I believe Mr. Kruger was not in the United States at the time of the purchase, and had a difficult time getting information back and forth, has never run an institution before, and the previous owner was not overly forthcoming with a lot of the information as it relates to licensure. Things have improved. I believe I can get their application in a position for change of ownership prepared and ready for October, if what I have seen over the last few weeks continues over the next month and a half. I believe I can get us to that point where we can do an effective change of ownership. But there still lives this piece, which is the license that is not currently, you know, is out of the time frames that are required by statute. And that's where we're living the challenge.
Okay. If I could, just a couple clarifying questions too, and maybe against our rules. Obviously, a change of ownership in the rules, you have to take action on that in a certain amount of time, which was not followed. We know that. And respectfully, for Mr. Kruger, he's buying an institution, and that institution is licensed, and he's buying that and needs to be knowledgeable about those actions and meeting those expectations and requirements. And I'm feeling, I'm just going to share that we're all going to run through some hoops right now to try and help maybe the institution even be able to start students in October, when in reality, we don't know who the new owner is, anything about the new owner, the ability to operate the school as intended under the original licensure, and to have discussions even around continuing or approving the continuation or renewal of the license just seems inappropriate at this point in time. I don't think we can give true consideration to that. I would suggest, with guidance from the assistant AG, that, you know, that by not taking action of change of ownership and now getting to, you know, a year or whatever time frame later, I think that the license is, you know, ultimately defunct at this point. I'm not saying that's the case, but a change of ownership, we were supposed to be notified within 7 days. There's components of section, you know, R-439-110, both E and G, that have not been completed. And so ultimately, I don't know how we take any action on this except to have them go through a process of initial licensure again.
And Mr. Romano, board members, thank you for that. That is absolutely true. And I think there's some credence to lead to the fact that, you know, it's better to withdraw an application and apply than have a denial on your record. So, you know, I do think based on what you're saying, again, yes, the board does have the option, because they are woefully outside of the review times, that, you know, they could submit the change of ownership information correctly. The board could review that. And in the meantime, they could also apply for an initial license to run this. if the board chooses.
Just a, I'm sorry, Dr. Mittman and members of the board, just a point of clarification from Mr. Monahan is a change of ownership, my understanding, would not be required if, in fact, the institution has to go through the entire process of licensure over again, because they would be representing themselves as this particular institution, which is no longer licensed by the state of Arizona. So you wouldn't need to do both. They do have some of their information, but I just want to make sure that I'm accurate on that particular point for clarification, that they would just be redoing an entire brand new, as it's brand new institution application.
Yes. Yes, you are correct. I apologize, members of the board, Kevin. That is absolutely correct.
Okay. So if that were the case, and let me put this out to the rest of the board, if that were the case, we would request that they submit a new application, that it has to be really, really good so that come October 28th, you guys, you know, have everything taken care of, and that you would have to defer the start of your next class to, you know, sometime after that. So I know you were saying early October, so obviously it would have to be in November. And you would also have to not advertise for the first recruiting students until you have approval for licensure. I believe that's correct. Right? Yeah. So that's what I think. I don't see any other options right now, unless anyone else on the board sees another path forward.
Dr. Mittman, this is Dr. Lack. I 100% agree with that. I don't think we would give, we've reprimanded a lot of institutions for administrative capacity, and I think this is kind of one of those examples of that's gone awry. And so, to be honest, them setting themselves apart as themselves was probably a really the best path forward for them as far as starting over and getting it right the first time. I am kind of disappointed at how much time it looks like the staff have had to kind of, you know, hold the hand over the last years. You know, $5,000 in late fees is wow. Never seen that before, ever. So I really do support, starting over, get out of the change of control and get it right this time. And then stay right.
Anyone else?
Dr. Mittman and members of the board, just a point of clarification for the institution as well. If this is the direction the board wants to go, just for the institution itself, one of the issues that you will have to work with, this is not part of our board, but any additional funding that you receive, your institution would then, and perhaps Mr. Monahan can correct me if I'm wrong, but the fact that your license expired December 31st, 2020, any student that was enrolled in your institution from January 1st through today, was attending an unlicensed institution. So I know that you also have funding sources from the VA, I believe. You're not a Title IV institution, so there is not a necessarily report there. But there is also whatever tuition that the students paid during that time frame that potentially could be refunded. I'm bringing this up because this is a new territory for me and for the board. But the license would have expired on the 20th, so any student enrolled from January 1 to today, Mr. Monahan, am I looking at something that is different than that?
Kevin, I wouldn't feel comfortable answering that real quick right now. So let me look into that, and I'll reach out to you, and you can reach out to the applicant and they can you can provide that information to them. If that
works. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So looks like we are going to the October 28th meeting. Mr. Baker and Kruger, please make sure that you get all of your materials in time, you know, with ample opportunity for the staff to review it and make sure that the application.
Any questions? Dr. Mittman, board members, I did just want to note real quickly that if the school does not want to give up their application, if they don't want to defer their application and then fill out a new application, they don't have to do that, but with the understanding about what we discussed today, if they don't. It's really up to them if they want to withdraw their application or not.
Can you expand on that? I'm not sure what you mean by I'm not sure what you mean by that. I apologize, sir.
No, that's okay. Absolutely. I was just stating that it's your decision whether to withdraw the application. The board is just requesting based on the facts and what's been discussed today. So it is your choice whether to withdraw the application, with the understanding that the board might possibly just deny the present one that you have at the next meeting.
Okay, so our options are to withdraw the application and perhaps stand liable for any VA funding from July 1st for students that we had, or to continue with this application knowing it's late, provide whatever material is missing from the renewal application and maybe get denied in October. Is that what I'm hearing our options are?
Well, I can't give you legal advice, but what I am stating is that the board's options are to consider your application as it is, which they have stated that they probably would not be able to do that, or to withdraw your application and file a new application since you are outside the substantive and administrative review times.
All right. And at this point, what is missing from the application that you have is our financials.
Well, I apologize. Dr. Members of the board, Mr. Baker, I'm going to have to really sit down over the next week and determine exactly what we're missing, because we're talking about two different things. We're talking about this, which is a license, mm-hmm. and then we're talking about the change of ownership. Okay. Upon review of change of ownership, there's a number of documents that we're missing, certainly some of the financial components, and then a number of documents that literally I just received yesterday afternoon at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So have I looked at those documents? Zero. Not at all. I have not. I don't know what you submitted. I did not have the opportunity to review that at this point in time. So that is something that we would do as either part of the change of ownership in the renewal application, or as part of the initial application if you were to reapply as a new institution. But I think to A.G. Monahan's guidance in terms of we don't provide that legal guidance, there might be some opportunity there for you to research what your options might be with a legal professional.
Okay, I understand. And so we're clear, the documents that were submitted yesterday was documents that I've been working on with Fred, updating the course catalog and enrollment agreement and the checklists with that. We'd submitted an updated one beginning of August, and frankly, those updates I thought would be part of the renewal that we'd be submitting in September. But Fred seemed to feel like if we could get those submitted to you today, that would help to actually sway you to go towards a renewal and accepting the renewal rather than having us start over again. It was just those four documents, the two checklists, the catalog, and the enrollment. Everything else should have been in. So I am concerned that materials did not get to you. So, yeah. All right. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate that. And so the decision process now is we tell you what we'd like to do after a consultation with an attorney, or where do we go from here? I'm not sure of next steps, and I want to be sure I'm clear.
I think you have, and I'm not an attorney, but I think, you know, the two options are you could attempt to repair a renewal that has been both deficient, late, and has a missing piece in not having a complete change of ownership, that without the change of ownership being in place, there's nothing really to renew, because without the change of ownership being completed, you know, it's as if the institution still, in some regard, belongs to, you know, to its previous owner, who I think was the founder. And risk the possibility of it being denied, or you start fresh. There's no change of ownership requirement because you're coming as if, you know, as if you were completely new, right? So there's not, so that removes the change of ownership, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like an etch-a-sketch, if I'm correct, in that, you know, you're starting over. You know, it seems like, you know, over the past 6 weeks, you know, since you joined the team, Mr. Baker, and worked with Mr. Lockhart, that, you know, you're developing some momentum. And so it's likely that, or I would assume that you would have a really nicely prepared, you know, fully documented initial application without any of the baggage of the of trying to renew, you know, a late and deficient renewal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. My biggest concern is the financial liability that opens Darius up to.
I would note that just for the board to clarify that regardless of whether you deny the renewal for the purposes that it was late or they submit a new application, we're still looking at the same potential exposure for operating a school that didn't renew timely. I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. That clarified that question, Mr. Baker. So it sounds like, you know, you bear that vulnerability either way.
Right. Right. I understand.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Baker or Mr. Krueger?
I'm not sure if there's any other information we can provide or that you guys need moving forward, but like I said, we'll do some discussion and either have a slam bang renewal presentation for you or a slam bang new presentation for you in October.
Okay, we're looking forward to it. Although if we keep pushing decisions off to October, I'll give everyone advance warning that I'm going to be on vacation. Okay. All right.
Well, all right. Thank you.
See you guys in October.
Just Dr. Nevin and the board, just so I'm clear, so we're deferring any action on this institution to the October meeting. Is that correct?
I believe that's how I understand it, yes.
Okay. I just want to be clear. All right.
So just a point of clarification as well. So the license has expired, right? Is that factual, or are you suggesting that the license is still active until this is reviewed?
I think it expired.
So there's two things that are going on here. The answer is yes, it's expired. It expired on 12/31/2020. There is, and perhaps I can get Ms. Stanfield to give us the history on this, because I have reviewed it to find out where in statute rule that allows us an institution to continue to operate after that, which is what we've been operating. This institution has been operating on this extension so that they can continue to recruit students and continue to provide us with information and continue to go forward with the renewal. I don't have the point of clarity on that. And perhaps Ms. Stanfield, you could fill us in.
In the past, it was my understanding, and again, it's been a while, so I don't know if it was a formal opinion from the AG, but the license, although it was expired, remained in effect until final action was taken either by staff or board. This is, I would say, an anomaly. So I don't know at this point in time if that would, that's a really good question. I mean, we would give it a month or two because we knew it was going to happen and we'd get what we needed. But this has been an ongoing process for almost a year now. So I don't know.
Thank you. And to Ms. Anthony, point, the next institution that we're going to talk or bring up in front of the board, their license had expired, but it's not because it needed to have action to the board, which is where we're going to meet with that particular institution next. So in reality, we've pushed them to the next meeting so that it is not, as far as as far as the state's concerned, a problem. But that's only because they're on a financial and they need to be approved by the full board. This is, as Ms. Stanfield said, very much an anomaly we've never seen before.
Okay. Any other questions?
Well, and this is Assistant Attorney General. This is Assistant Attorney General. Just to add to that, Terry is absolutely correct. Because we've run out of the substantive review times and we still have not received that all the information requested. So the analysis is a little bit more nuanced. However, I do think that, that's a consideration for the school, not so much the board. If the board chooses to, accept the application, the new application, and he withdraws the renewal, then it's my understanding that there are no issues for the board to consider. But I will look into this for the board and have a better answer for you at our next meeting.
And Dr. Mittman and board, if we operate the way we've done in the past, the institution could still continue to operate because no action has been defined by the board or by the staff at this point in time. The institution could continue to operate as it has been doing from now until we get to an October meeting to make the formal decision about the license and the change of ownership, that they would continue. They mentioned to us they have a class that could potentially start in the beginning of October. Our meeting is not until the end of October. Following what we have done in the past, the institution could, I guess, they could operate without penalty the way they have been operating the last 8.5 months.
So can I play the other side of the argument, which is they've gone past the period of time in the rules that state what's necessary to have a renewal. The board didn't take action to extend that period of time for them. Would it not default to where the license is forfeited at that point once you hit that period, unless some additional action is taken? I'm just trying to understand the process. I'm not trying to be punitive to school. I'm just trying to understand if they surpass the period of time that they had to work within to get the renewal, and the board has not taken action to extend that period of time, would that license not be forfeited at that point?
Dr. Mimmon, Mr. Armand on board, I again, because we're in new territory here, I believe that based upon the extensions that we have provided the institution that you are would be accurate in terms of we have allowed them to continue the operation post deadline. And I think, again, we may need more clarification from the AG.
Well,
I'm just not sure if we need to take action to say we have to make a motion to allow them more time to operate under licensure review, or if we have to take a motion of we need to suspend that license. I guess I'm still very unclear, and maybe we can't answer that at this board meeting, but I do think that's the question. I don't think it necessarily lives in limbo. There is a period of time that a school has to receive that approval. They've gone past that piece of it. There's nothing in the rules that states the board has to take action to deny that license. It may be implied that once that period is hit, if they have not received the renewal, the license is forfeited. I guess that's up for interpretation.
So, Dr. Mittman, it's Susan Carrillo. Going on to that thought, what I'm wondering is if it was implied or if it wasn't necessarily by the fact that the staff was working with them, maybe it would have been continued or whatever, but I think the board action we could take today, just to be very clear, is we could have a vote to say, don't operate from this point till after you hear from us in the October meeting, just to be really clear, because if it's not clear whether they were allowed to continue past expiration or not, we could make it clear as of today at least, because that's my main concern is I don't want new people starting and new advertising going out if it's not going to be approved yet.
Board members, this is Seamus Monahan, Assistant Attorney General. Just looking, did a little deep dive on your rules here. And essentially, what your rules state is that the applicant has 60 days to cure any deficiencies. And if not, then the board can give them, the board can give them 60 days. But this is after a 30-day extension. And so you can only grant one extension of the 60-day deadline. And if they don't cure the deficiency, the board shall deny the application. So we would close out the application, and they would reapply.
So in other words, automatically the application is closed out just based on the timeline that you just said.
Yes.
Right. So, yes. So then with respect to Ms. Carrillo's suggestion or just bringing up the idea, I don't know if we have to take an action, because technically the school is operating. If the school were operating now, the school would be operating without, which would be that a fine or penalty in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
I do not see any penalties associated with closing an application.
Right, but I'm saying that activity, whether it's advertising or recruiting between now and October 28th, would be operating a school without a license.
Yes, and we would consider any time before that operating with his license.
Okay. So,
but you would want to make a motion to close the application denied based on the fact that it is deficient and past the substantive review times.
Okay. So that wasn't the option that we were discussing. So we were leaving it up to the tool as to whether to persist in the current application. Yes. And so you're saying that that's not an option now.
I am saying that, yes.
Okay. And if technically those times have already passed, do we need to take a motion for that, or do we need to vote on that, or is that just fait accompli?
I think it would be best practice to vote on it.
Okay. All right. So this is not, I don't think that this is a matter of either board opinion or or how we feel about it, just based on the rules that, you know, the timeline or the various deadlines and their extensions are significantly past, right? You can't.
Yeah.
All right.
Can I interject real quick, Dr. Mittman, one more thing? I realized, yes, we're working within the rules, but trying to be fair to the school as well. The school obviously is working under the impression that they are providing information for an application process and all of those types of things. So do we have it within our rights, even though we are past the period of where we would even could do the 60-day extension piece, do we have it within our ability and authority to at least acknowledge that because of the school's of us continuing that discussion with the school up until this point, that they were technically operating within the intent of licensure up until this date today? Does that make sense?
I think that's consistent with what Mr. LaMountain and Mr. Monahan were saying. So in other words, it sounds like it mitigates any risk that the school had up until today. And moving forward beyond today, the school cannot, cannot function as a school until it gets the license approved. The new license application approved at the October 28th meeting.
Thank you.
Good news and bad news, Mr. Baker and Mr. Krug.
Well, no, I appreciate the effort to reduce Darius's liability financially. Let's see, it says I've got to lower my hand. Sorry about that. I appreciate the efforts you're making to reduce Darius's liability, and I just want to be sure, because one of the questions on the application is, have any of the owners or board of directors listed been in a degree-granting institution that had their license revoked? This would not be a revoked license.
Right, and it's, you're not a degree-granting institution.
Right. No, we are not, but I just want to be sure that that's not going to impact negatively further status. The other question I had was, given that the prior owner didn't actually sign the final change of ownership document until July 21st of 2021, just 6 weeks ago, would the liability still be on the prior owner, or would any liability be on Darius?
I don't think those are questions that we can speak to, board members. Okay. I apologize.
Okay.
So basically, why don't we make a motion, vote on the motion, and then we'll finish up with like next steps for. Mr. Baker, Mr. Krueger. So I'm gonna ask Mr. Armayo and Ms. Cardullo. What do you want to make a motion? Which one's the second bit?
Well, I'll go ahead and start. I'm sure Assistant Attorney General will correct me if I misstate, but I will make the motion at this time to discontinue the license for the Tucson School of Horseshoeing based on their exceeding the time frame required to renew their application.
And this is Susan Perdulo. I'll second Mr. Romano's motion.
Okay, good.
And Dr. Mittman and members of the board, clarification then, date of that is effective 8/26/2021. Is that correct?
Correct.
Revise the motion.
Does that require a revising of the motion, or is that just...
Yes. Maybe I could restate it for you.
By all means.
So if I heard it correctly, the motion was to deny the license renewal for Tucson School of Horseshoeing for the purposes that the for failure to comply with the board's application procedures.
Effective August 26, 2021.
Okay. And I'll second the amended motion.
We have a motion. We have a second. Can we get the vote?
Okay. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman's an aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck is an aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Lupke.
Aye.
Mr. Lupke votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote, 7 ayes, no nays, the motion passes.
Great. Okay, let's see. So far, at least we passed the budget for 2020. And so let me just...
Could we take a 5-minute break?
Yeah, I was going to say it's 12 o'clock. I think we're not going to get through all of this before needing a lunch. Anyway, makes up, I think we had a record. We set a record a couple of months ago for the shortest board meeting, so maybe this... be the longest. So why don't we take 20 minutes now, and we'll do lunch, and then let's power through the rest of the agenda.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So we'll need a
and
motion
back. Oh, I'll make a motion to do not adjourn, but to take a break at 12:03 for 20 minutes. Can I get a second?
Anybody? I'll second. Mike Romano, second.
All right.
Thank you.
Good.
Thanks. Thank you.
Aye.
Aye.